Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 28, and I am Libya, your host. And this week, we have two returning guests.
I'm Tom from Glendale, California.
And I'm Allison from LA.
And welcome back, guys. And this week, we're going to start off with actually some pretty depressing news, which is that Andy Whitfield's cancer is back, and he is pulled out of season two of Spartacus. So right now, it's very much up in the air, and I'm totally depressed now, mainly because I saw the videos of him at Comic-Con and how healthy and good he looked and how excited he was to be back in the series. So this is like, feels like a pretty big blow, because I think he was cancer-free for what, like 4 or 5 months, and now
something
like that. Yeah, so I don't even know what the next step is or what he's doing exactly, but I mean, my thoughts are out to his family and all that.
It sucks. I just saw that news and I'm like, man.
Yeah. I was really, I was excited for him and I was excited for the show because I mean, where it left off last season was a really great spot. So I have no idea. The producers right now have basically said that they're not saying anything. They don't know what they're going to do. So I guess in the next few weeks when I hear, I'll let you guys know. The other things I want to talk about is that J.J. Abrams is producing a new series that will be set in Alcatraz. And it's like some mystery series that he's not talking about, not telling anybody about. He's just filming it in Alcatraz and it's going to premiere on Fox, and that's all we got. He's trying to be super mystery guy.
J.J. Abrams keeping secrets? No.
And the other thing I want to remind you guys of is next week is the big premiere week. We only had like really one show premiere this week, but next week, like most of the main shows and a lot of the returning shows are coming back. The main things I want to remind you guys of is The Event, which is the show that I'm the most excited about. And Hawaii 5-0 premiere on Monday. And Hawaii 5-0 has our guy James Marsters on it. So, woo! And it
don't forget Grace Park.
I was about to say, yeah, Grace Park and
the dude from Moonlight.
That's not what I was going to say. I was thinking from Lost.
This is the third time CBS has given him a series. So
I know. The thing is I don't like him at all. So, I don't think he's a very good actor. I don't think he's very good looking. I don't understand why CBS keeps giving him shows.
He's got abs and sparkly blue eyes.
He's not particular. Never mind. he just doesn't do it for me.
I'm just saying.
And somebody, I'm sure there are some Moonlight people out there who totally disagree with me, which is fine.
Don't forget Daniel Day Kim.
That's what I said. The guy from Lost. Daniel Day Kim.
Okay, sorry.
And he's got some abs. What are you talking about? Anyway, like, Daniel Day Kim is hot. Like, that's why I'm watching the show. Because I don't even know who the other guy's partner. I don't know who the heck that guy is.
Oh, Scott Conn.
No.
I don't know who that is.
It's James Conn's son. He just finished an arc on Entourage. And he's been in a bunch of stuff, but
yeah, I don't know who he is either. I don't. But I did see the preview, and the preview looked pretty good.
You know, this is the second time they've tried to bring that back.
Is it the second?
They did a pilot in the 90s with Gary Busey. It's like,
God.
It's like, hey, don't cast a certifiable whack job and your pilot might sell.
Well,
just a thought.
Which, considering that CBS owns Hawaii 5-0 and is the network, and they still didn't buy their own pilot, it's like, wow.
That pilot was not very good. But this one, I saw a pretty long preview and it looked pretty good. And apparently Grace Park's character and Daniel Day Kim's characters are cousins. And I'm like, since they're both Korean, so now they're cousins. Okay.
Well, you
they're
know,
the only
all
Korean
Asian
people
in
Hawaii. Okay.
Well, the thing that's funny is they're supposed to be Hawaiian. So I actually find it funny.
Well, you know that her character was originally a guy in the original show.
What does she always cast? I was like, I thought about that. Oh, wait.
We want a gender flip, but if we put somebody hot in there, they won't mind.
Well, I mean, yeah, that was her Battlestar thing, right? She was Boomer.
Yeah, it's like a theme in her career.
Well, hey. She does it well, so whatever.
And she's a lovely person.
The other thing I wanted to let people know is Undercover's premieres on Wednesday, speaking of J.J. Abrams. I am excited about that, even though, both of the people in that show good-looking people.
Extremely. So good-looking,
I was just from that perspective, that's enough for me to tune in. but it's got the Alias kind of feel to it as far as the super spy thing, and I'm kind of excited about that. So hopefully that show is good. But those are the three shows that I'm going to be watching as far as new shows this week.
The Event.
Yeah, The Event, Y5O, and Undercovers. Those are my three shows for the coming week. But, of course, there's like a million returning shows next week, and I'm not even going to list them all. You guys all know what you're watching.
Yeah. Well, also debuting tomorrow night, as a matter of fact, is in the place of True Blood's little niche on the dial, is going to be Boardwalk Empire. And right. I'm really looking forward to that a lot.
It's supposed to be the best new show, according to some critics.
Yes, I've been looking forward to it for months. It stars Steve Buscemi. It's directed and produced by,
Marty?
Scorsese.
Oh,
Martin Scorsese, yeah.
Right.
So it's going to be... It just looks amazing. I saw the making of special that they did. It was like a 15-minute rundown on what the show is about and how they're putting it together, and it just looked absolutely fascinating. So I think this one is something to get excited about.
My only problem is it feels a little like a mob-ish movie.
Well, it is. I mean, it's the origins of the mafia during the time of Prohibition.
Right. So, mob stuff is not my thing. I just don't like it. And so I'm not excited about it. It feels like The Sopranos to me. Just like,
well, you know, they wanted to fill that Sopranos type vacuum in terms of, you know, their adult crime drama.
Right, I understand. It's just I never watched Sopranos because I didn't like mob stuff. And so this feels like mob stuff, and I'm sure it's brilliant, but I'm not excited about it. That's all.
I think it's interesting that Buscemi's the lead. I mean, he's a great actor.
Oh, he's fantastic, but he's usually secondary.
And he's not what, you know, most Hollywood casting directors would say, hey, I want this guy as a lead. But I have friends who've met him who said he radiates charisma.
Oh,
yeah, well, he definitely does. Yeah. It's, and the character that he's playing, I mean, doesn't have to be a leading man type. He's the head of, you know, a criminal. Well, he's not specifically a head of a criminal organization. He's a corrupt government official who kind of expands into organized crime. But the character can be, you know, a character actor type. And so it's great to see him in a lead role like this, because I think he can carry it.
Oh, yeah. I think he's one of the best actors out there. I really like Steve Buscemi. And that's actually the only thing that's making me think maybe I'll watch it, you know? But
you know, it's pretty much based on real life stuff.
Yes.
I understand what you're saying, but that's like the only thing that I've seen that I've liked of that era and about mobsters is The Untouchables. I love that movie. But, and this is sort of similar.
This is similar. It takes place, you know, in a slightly earlier, but pretty much the same time period. And the thing that impressed me so much is the look of the thing. They built their own boardwalk to do this on, which looks amazing. And the costumes are exquisite.
A friend of mine in New York has done background work on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And just says the production design is amazing.
Well, my thing is what I'll do is I'll let you guys come to the podcast, talk about it, and see if you sell me on it, and then I'll jump in late. But that's okay. I can jump in late on a show. It's just there's so much stuff coming back that I'm excited about that I personally don't feel like I have time at this point to jump in on something that I'm thinking like
that you're lukewarm on.
I'm lukewarm on, and I think that it's probably great. It's just not my thing, and that's fine.
Well, you should at least try to record it and then, you know, watch it later and see if it's something you like, because I think probably a lot of stuff is going to get set up in the premiere episode, so it won't be something that you'd want to miss if you actually get into it.
That's true, and I always watch stuff from the beginning, you know, so mm-hmm. I'm not one of those people that jumps in late. If you guys convince me that the show is fantastic, then I'm going to jump in with 2 feet from the beginning and then catch up. That's not even a question. But there's like next week, it's insane how many,
crazy.
How much television I'm supposed to be watching. So let me pace myself. How about that? So let's start off the actual... Wait, you got news. Sorry.
A couple of news items. One bad news and one, lukewarm news. The bad news, Kaley Cuoco, I hope I'm not butchering her name, from Big Bang Theory, broke her leg. And so she was originally going to just miss one episode, and now they are going to put the show on hiatus for a couple of episodes, and she'll miss multiple episodes. So I don't know if this affects how they're going to premiere the show, because it's anchoring the new Thursday night comedy block, Big Bang Theory.
Well, it premieres this week.
Interesting that they're going to go ahead and... I wonder how
many shows they've got. Well, my TiVo says it's premiering this week, so...
But it's paired with Bleep, My Dad Says, which I don't know about you, but I really don't care.
That's what I didn't record. No, but it's not coming on this week. That's coming on maybe the next week. Because I was looking, like, I'm planning on watching that.
Yeah, if I were CBS, I would wait to premiere the new Big Bang Theory if you know you're going to have to miss some. Because this is the big gamble, moving it directly against the ABC and NBC shows. Especially the NBC comedies that typically come in third place or fourth.
Right, but I mean, personally, I'm going to be watching Big Bang. Like, I don't care what else is on, that's what I'm watching. Actually, it bumped because I only have two tuners. Mm-hmm. I'm recording 30 Rock and I'm recording Big Bang, and it bumped Bones from my schedule. Ooh. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'm not watching Bones.
Survival of the fittest in this household. The piece of lukewarm news... The King of the World is going to TV. James Cameron is going to do a TV version of True Lies. And for one, it's been so long since the movie came out and the threatened sequel. And two, J.J. Abrams is doing Undercovers, which is very, very True Lies-y. So I don't know if there's...
Well, also, I don't think Cameron can do television. I mean, he did Dark Angel and it was awful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so for me, his only... Cameron does movies where he takes 3 years to do a movie. That's fine. Yeah. And it's brilliant. But TV works at a much faster pace, and you got to be up to the task, and you got to come up with stories a lot faster. And so, granted, we've only seen one show, which was bad. So that's all I have to go from.
Yeah, I mean, he comes up with like these epic ideas that you can tell in 2 hours because it's just a lot of effects and things like that. But I don't know about sustaining lot of different things for an entire season.
If he's going up against J.J. Abrams, my money's on Abrams.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
ABC won the bidding war for the show, so we'll see.
Well, I actually noticed ABC, I was going through and trying to pick out the new shows. ABC doesn't have anything I want to watch. Like, I didn't add any ABC shows to my TiVo. Like, if it's on ABC, it's a returning show or whatever, but there was nothing new in their pilots that, I'm going to watch No Ordinary Family. Some people are saying it's going to be good, some people are saying it's going to be bad, but it's Michael Chiklis and Julie Benz, and I have to watch it. I at least have to watch the pilot. There's no way.
I like the two of them, but I was so unimpressed by the trailer that I saw for it, and I understand from people who actually saw the pilot at Comic-Con that it was pretty bad.
I liked the pilot.
Well, and that's the thing.
And it was, I saw the pilot, now granted, I saw the pilot after I saw the pilot for The Cape, which is a mid-season on NBC, and that's like night and day. The Cape didn't look good, and No Ordinary Family was very well produced. It has two actors I really adore in it, and it had a sense of fun that's been missing from a lot of the, a certain late lamented NBC show.
You mean Heroes?
Whereas Heroes was all, four seasons of people whining about having powers, whereas this one, they discover they have powers and they realize, hey, this is kind of cool.
Right.
Which I hope would be the normal response instead of people throwing a pity party.
Well, and that's the thing.
Also, it's just kind of like, The Incredibles without animation.
Right. Well, and I love The Incredibles, and that's fine for me. I'm like, if you're going to do The Incredibles live action, I'm in,
And of course, they shifted the powers. I mean, face it, The Incredibles was an homage to... classic Fantastic Four comic books, but it's what you do with the premise
right.
that makes it interesting.
It's, well, and I like the part in the trailer where his friend has turned his basement into like the secret bat cave. I was like, this is your lair. And I was like, that's cool.
I love that each of them has a confidant with whom they can, you know,
share the secret. Oh, I didn't know that. I just saw the guys, one in the trailer that I saw. But I mean, by putting two big actors that I already like in a series, I'm at least going to check it out. You know what I mean? And it's about superheroes, so I'm watching it.
And the people behind it are pretty good. Greg Berlanti, who did Everwood, and Eli Stone.
Well, I love Everwood, so then you got me again. I'm in. So I'm watching that. So we've spent a great deal of time talking about what we are watching versus what we watched. These are all the things we're going to be watching next week. So let's get into the stuff that we actually watched, which was really eclectic. None of us watched a lot of the same things, which is unusual. Usually we coordinate a little bit better, so I apologize ahead of time. But one thing we did all watch was the season finale of True Blood. Yeah. So who wants to start us off?
I guess I will. I was on a trip last week, and so I got back, and there was already a lot of buzz on Facebook about the finale.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, when the creator of the show comes on afterwards to kind of apologize for it. And
preview, oh, did he really?
To preview the next season. I just thought
he told you what was coming up.
I just thought as a season finale, I thought it was kind of unsuccessful. I didn't mind the anticlimactic finish to the big story arc with the big bad, so to speak. But they went out of their way to set up all these cliffhangers. Mm-hmm. They didn't need to go cliffhanger crazy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. and I didn't really feel like it was a cliffhanger. Like though I have to say I really liked the episode. Except for maybe the last minute. Like, everything else, I loved what they did with the King of Mississippi. That was fantastic. He was so burnt up and black, and his teeth were falling out. And then they did add injury to insult and bury him in cement. I was like, that's great. That was just, all that was really good. And then I was actually, the thing about Bill is he is so boring and so uninteresting. He actually surprised me. And threw Eric in the cement. I was like, whoa. Oh, all right.
Yeah, but the double cross. I mean, it was kind of surprising, but not too surprising.
Actually, I thought it was. I didn't. I really.
Yeah, I did not see it.
Didn't see that come. Because Bill is always the, I guess I'm going to brood here in this corner. And I'm not going to do anything.
It's okay.
Yeah, and basically that's all he does. And so by the fact that he just was like, you know what? I'm going to get rid of all of Suki's enemies. Though, I think his motivation for getting rid of Eric was not, I'm getting rid of enemies, I'm getting rid of a rival.
A romantic
rival.
Yeah,
it wasn't that altruistic.
I loved the big reveal that his whole relationship with Suki was set up.
Oh, that was fantastic.
And I have friends who've read the books and told me that, you know, they are eventually not going to be an item. But I get... I guess this is the thing that really...
Well, actually, I've read the books. They did change what the event was, which is why I was actually ticked off, because the event that actually breaks them up for good happened at the end of season one. And Suki kind of blew it off. And I was like, what? It was basically, in the books, what it is he finds out that she got molested by her uncle, and then he goes and kills the uncle. That happened in season one, right? When she finds out that he went and killed her uncle, she was like, are you kidding me? She breaks it off in the books. That's because her thing was, I confided in you this information, and you went and killed someone, and that guilt is on me. So now it's my fault that you killed my uncle, therefore I can't be with you. So that was actually... the event that broke them up in the books. So when it happened in the show and then nothing happened, she's like, oh, I guess I forgive you. I was like, oh my God. And then in this, what worried me about this episode was they broke up, they got back together, they broke up, they got back together, and it finally looked like she broke up with him. And then she's leaving. She's like, oh, I just, wait, don't go. And I'm like, oh my God, I wanted to hit her with a stick. So finally,
I feel like doing that with Sookie frequently. Actually.
Yes, that's true. And I was so happy that they finally said something that it looks like has finally that has really gotten through to Sookie that she's been manipulated and maybe they really are done. And I'm like, thank God.
There were
a
lot of people who were afraid that because in real life they're married now.
Are they?
Yeah, yes. They got married a couple weekends ago. But there were a lot of people who were
I hate when that happens on shows, but that's beside the point.
There were a lot of people who suspected that they might alter that, the show relationship in favor of the real life relationship. But I'm glad they're trying to give at least lip service to what's happened in the books.
Right. And that's, but because for me, of course, the main relationship that I care about is actually Sookie and Eric. Like, that's the relationship that really is the big relationship in the books. Because it's the will they, won't they. Because she dates other people. She dates Alice H. She dates
everybody.
Yeah, she dates a little bit of everybody. And she goes, and that's the thing, is I wanted her to get to that point. Because the whole thing about Bill, is that he's her first love and really her first guy. They say in the book she's never slept with anybody because she could read their minds. So Bill was literally her first and only relationship, which is why she fell so hard and got so badly hurt and all that. And what's cool is that then she starts dating werewolves, she starts dating were-leopards, she starts dating, like, so she actually gets out there and dates other people and actually has healthy relationships. So I was totally cool with that. But then in the back, they always have Eric kind of just lurking. And he kind of dips in every once in a while. And it's that is the whole long-term, ongoing relationship that you're cheering for. So I was waiting for that.
Setting up for that.
Oh, thank you.
See, my problem is that the way they've portrayed Sookie is so aggressively stupid that I can't root for her for anybody because she's just so dumb. I want to smack her all the time.
I mean, I can't argue.
She acts like, you know, these things happen to her and Bill betrays her and this and that. And she always acts surprised. Like she was expecting a completely normal relationship with a vampire.
Worst telepath ever.
I know. Well, she can't read Bill, so that's valid.
Yeah, but still.
But still, I mean, what do you really expect to have a normal relationship with a vampire? I mean, come on. I mean, she's not going to get the little white picket fence and, you know, dancing around in the sunlight. That's not going to happen. And she always acts surprised by that. And by now, really, she should be past that point.
I agree with you. I think that they're writing her way dumber on the show than she is in the books, which is irritating.
Mm-hmm.
Because
she's still smarter than Bella.
Well, I have no frame around. I didn't watch that show, but movies.
I'm talking about
the movies. I didn't watch those, but it is disappointing that she's not as intelligent.
Yeah.
Because in the books, Jason's supposed to be the idiot, and they've done a pretty good job of showing that on the show, so that's fine. But Sookie is supposed to be smart, and I don't think that comes through at all on the show. So they make her basically the damsel in distress, and that's it. That's her job. She gets rescued by the guys, and that's it. But what's great in the books is she learns how to take care of herself, and she doesn't depend on them at all.
Well, maybe that's coming up, I hope.
I hope so.
Yeah, but it took Sookie about one or two books before she became very self-sufficient. I feel like, and I think because the show is, it just feels like it's dragging. I'm like, come on.
I don't like the time compression.
What do you mean?
That Arlene is pregnant with Renee's child.
Oh yeah, he was dead in season 1.
Season 1. So basically, in seasons 1 through 3, we've covered, you know, less than a, you know, less than 9 months of...
Yeah, because she didn't even look pregnant.
Mm-mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is true.
And from the perspective of the audience, she's had a 4-year pregnancy. So this is really dragging it out.
Well, I was like, how is she pregnant? Because at first, actually, I thought she was just crazy. Because she thought that Renee was the father of the kid. I was like, that's not possible. And then I was like, oh, well, because they kept playing. And I was like, oh, so maybe it is. But so let's talk about some of the other characters where they left them off.
Hoyt and Jessica.
Oh, this Jessica and Hoyt. Yeah.
Hoyt and Jessica. I'm pulling for them.
I really like it.
I love them to pieces. I really do. The thing that worries me is that,
mom.
You know, I watched the previews and I noticed there was a shot in the previews which I was really worried about and which never happened in the final episode. And I can only assume that they decided to hold it off for next season.
And what's that?
And it's a shot of Hoyt's mother with that shotgun she was
buying,
firing it.
Huh.
And you just see it from like looking down the barrel of the gun and she goes bang. And you don't see anything else, but you assume what she's pointing at. And they ended up not showing that. I assume probably because they thought that they had too many rifles going off in one episode.
That's true.
But they did not show that, and that was definitely in the preview. So I kind of worry about that little scene.
Well, and speaking of rifles going off, the Merlot brothers, it's a weird combination of me not caring whether he shot his brother, and I understand the brother's perspective. Like, he gave up the other part of his family because Sam was like, I'll take care of you, I'll be your brother. But then he hasn't come through on that.
I haven't liked how they played Sam, especially the second half of the season.
Yeah, he's like, they're trying to make him kind of evil, and Sam has never been whatever they're trying to
Sam's
do with his character.
Been fairly normal, except for the shifter.
Right.
And other than that, he's like the nice guy.
Right. And so now they're trying to...
Giving us the flashback where we see him, you know...
Kill somebody.
I thought, why'd you do that?
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, and so since he's capable of killing, he's probably... Being capable of killing and killing your own brother are two different things.
Two very different... I, as soon as they showed that, I went, he better have deliberately missed or shot him in the leg or something like that, or I'm never going to be able to look at Sam the same way again.
Exactly. I don't like that at all, so... Yeah.
Going back to Hoyt and Jessica for a second, I wonder, what was that? Was that like a voodoo doll or something on the floor?
That was weird. I don't know what that was supposed to mean.
You know, when I saw it, remember, what's her name collects dolls?
Who?
And who he was dating. What's the little crying...
Oh, the blonde idiot.
Yeah, I don't remember her name.
But you know who his mother wants to push on it. And they made a big deal in one of in the episode where they were in the restaurant that she collects dolls. And
so
I saw the doll on the floor, I thought, ooh, that is kind of psycho looking. That's psycho stalker looking.
Well, and that's the thing is, you get the impression that she is a bit psycho.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, she's a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, and let's talk about Lafayette for a second.
Lafayette and Jesus.
Oh, man.
I don't like where they're going with Lafayette's character at all. Like,
In terms of what?
Well, they're trying to do the whole, I'm having visions, I'm going to be a witch. Lafayette was fine the way he was, and now they're trying to give him powers, and I don't like that at all.
Is it that they're giving him powers, or is it that he's under Jesus' spell?
No, it's he's getting powers, and that's, that. I'm not going to call him Jesus.
Jesus.
Jesus was like, the V has unlocked your powers, and now I have to, have to train you to be, because he basically is saying you have powers too. You just need to be trained to be a witch. That's what they're telling him. And I'm like, I don't want Lafayette to be a witch. And I understand why they're doing it, because the next book is there's a huge witch storyline. And I get that, but I guess they figure they have to have a main character in that storyline or we won't care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But making Lafayette a witch is annoying to me.
Yeah, huh. It's like, can't there be any actual just ordinary human beings?
Right,
I mean, it's coming down to just, you know, Hoyt and
Tara's leaving. Tara basically, as far as we know, is gone.
You think
she
so?
Drove off.
Yeah,
I don't expect that she's going to be gone for good, though. Something's going to drag her back. But I actually like the fact that she drove off. It's like, yeah, that's the healthy thing.
Exactly, because when they had the flashes.
And when have these people been known to do the healthy, smart thing?
That's why I said I expect her back.
I think that when they showed this flashback and they showed all the things that happened to Tara in that town, I was like, you need to leave. I was like, yeah, you just need to go. And I like the fact that she did go.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best thing. And Tara's character was never big in the books, so I'm fine. You know, she...
I think she'll be bad.
I hope she's not, actually. Huh. Because I think that they have done as much as they could with her character. I think she's done. Because she basically found
She's very She's very integral, I think, to the way they conceptualize the story. So I do think she will be back. I think, you know, from the perspective of her character, that would be a disaster. But I think that she will be returning, not immediately, not like the very first. I would be very surprised if she was in the very first opening episode. But I think that ultimately she'll be back.
I actually hope she's not, just because I think that was a good closing for her character. It felt good.
Yeah, like, well, as opposed to every. I just don't think it'll hold.
As opposed to everybody else's finale, I thought that her ending was the best one. But
well, because it seemed like an ending instead of a cliffhanger.
Right. Yeah. And, and it felt good. I think that Suki's finale by the grave, and then the fairies
disappearing
coming
with the fairies. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing
I thought that was kind of
it was a little lame. No, I'm not gonna say it's not lame. But the one thing I do know is I know the where the fairy storyline is going, and her going to Fairyland or wherever the heck she's gone to is a step closer to getting to the good stuff. Because there's some, and I don't want to give any spoilers or say anything, but there is some really good storylines coming from the whole fairy stuff. Like, there's a lot of politics going on that we don't know about.
In Fairyland?
No, but you can make a joke about it, but it's hardcore. Like, that stuff that's going, like, the other fairy, like, she's got a little bit of, like, when she gets angry, she gets a little light come out of her hand, and that's about it. The other fairies are freaking ridiculously powerful. And there's actually, like, a war going on, and she's about to step into the middle of it.
Hmm.
And it's a really good story. So, I'm like, alright, hopefully we're getting towards close to that war, because that's one of the better books, is the fairy war. It sounds stupid when I say it out loud.
It sounds so effing lame.
Yeah, but the fairies are not like little things floating around on wings. These guys have powers, and they have special weapons, and actually, the best thing to think of is if you watch Supernatural, think of the angels fighting each other, like with serious powers. Like that's pretty much what the war looks like for those guys. So I'm excited about that. All right, we've talked about True Blood for a really long time because that's the only one we've all seen.
Yeah.
But I know we're tempted to stay on the subject. Anybody closing thing about True Blood? Thoughts about next season?
I'm looking forward to it.
The thing with Bill and the Queen. Queen Sophie Anne.
Oh, yeah, them fighting.
Fighting Matrix style.
The Matrix fighting, yeah.
I could have done without that.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't like Bill anyway, so hopefully he'll be killed and I'll be happy. But I seriously doubt that, so there you go. All right, let's move on to Mad Men. This will be the third week in a row we've talked Mad Men with three different guests, and apparently I can't get all three of you guys on the same podcast. When is the finale for Mad Men, by the way?
Oh, it's still a couple months off.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it just started in like mid-late July.
Well, let me know when the Mad Men finale is, since I don't keep track of the show, so that I can make sure all of you are together. Yeah, so all you guys are there at the same time to talk about the Mad Men finale.
Without getting too deep into it, I show my screenwriting class the pilot of Mad Men, and I tell you, in season four, there's a scene in one of the last two episodes that's a direct callback to something that happens in the pilot. And I love that when a show knows who it is, where they've been, and where they're going, and it feels organic. And there was an interview with Jon Hamm on NPR a couple days ago, promoting the new movie, The Town, that just opened up yesterday, talking about his character. But I love that they've given these characters very well-defined arcs.
Right.
And letting them, you know, letting them go up and down and all around in terms. And Libby was saying earlier that one of the reasons she stopped watching it is because of Betty. And even though I presume everybody knows that Don and Betty are no longer married in season four, but so she's not in every episode, which I'm sure Libby will be happy to know.
Why are you talking about me in a third person when I'm sitting across from you?
Just for our viewers, for our listeners. But it's interesting that I can't decide if I don't like the character, because you're not supposed to. But I can't decide if the actor's doing a really good job because I hate her, or if she's really not that good.
I got the impression when I was watching it that she really wasn't that good. She was just irritating to me, and I found that all her drama that she was going through was just not sympathetic, and I didn't care. And I watched all of season one of Mad Men, and I thought the pilot was one of the best pilots I've ever seen. I thought the pilot was incredible. And that kept me going through all of season one, and I kept waiting for the series to match up to the pilot, because I didn't feel that the rest of season one was as good as the pilot. So I was a little disappointed by that, but I really love John Hamm. Don Draper is a fantastic character. And if the show was like all about him, I would still be watching it. But it's an ensemble, which is fun. And I usually like ensembles, but part of my problem was that some of the other people in the ensemble were not interesting enough for me. They didn't carry, like, when you have a show and you've got all your side ancillary, thank you, characters, I should be fascinated, because usually you have character actors who are really good, and I should be fascinated by them. And some of them I was, I liked his boss. I liked, there was the guy in season one who was like the closet gay guy.
Salvatore.
And I was like, ooh, I want to know more about what's going on with him. And, oh, I want to, you know, like, but the couple of characters that I was really interested in, they didn't do anything with in season one enough for me. So I was like, I'm not sure about this. And then we got into season two, and it became more about Betty, and I was just like, nope. And that was when Peggy, for me, became more unlikable. And
in season two?
Yeah.
After the baby?
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is I actually found out that the reason that I didn't like her was actually going to be revealed to not be true later, but I didn't know that at the time. You know, when she was going home, and there was a baby in the crib, and she was ignoring the baby, I thought that was her baby. I thought her family was raising her. And you're supposed to think that when you watch the beginning of season two. They're leading you to believe that, so they reveal that that's not true. But I didn't make it to the reveal. I was just watching it, and I was like, I really don't like her. So, you know, and somebody suggested that I just start back up at season four, because they were like, you're not going to miss much.
Season four is almost like... I mean, I heard an interview with Matthew Weiner. He approached the season four premiere as if it was a pilot for a new show, because it's a new circumstance, I mean, in terms of the company and in terms of Don's private life.
And so I might do that. I might check it out, and though now is probably not a good time because there's so much new stuff on, but that sounds interesting. I do really like Don Draper. So as long as that story is going...
The arc they gave his character was fascinating, because when he starts at the beginning of the... You know, he's basically almost opposite the Don we met. He can't... You know, women...
Don't like him?
Well, it's not that they don't like him, but women are changing. It's the mid-60s now. And so he can't just do his Gary Cooper thing and expect women to, fawn all over him.
And that's kind of funny.
So it's kind of fascinating. Plus, he's drinking too much. And so the two episodes ago, you probably talked about the suitcase last week.
Yeah.
That was kind of the episode that where it comes to a head where Don just kind of crashes and burns.
Right. With him and Peggy, right.
And it's interesting with the next episode, and John Hamm talked with Terry Gross about that in Fresh Air, but the next episode, it was refreshing to see them, yeah, that really happened. He's still drinking, but he's not drinking too much. So when his secretary carries the four bottles of booze to his office, he sends her back. And I like Peggy. One of the things that's fascinating about Mad Men is examining the role of women and how the 60s is the pivotal decade for them. Because you have all these different women at different strata. You've got, why can't I think of her name? You've got Betty, who's still awful.
Right.
You've got Betty. You've got Peggy, who's kind of like the test case for, okay, we gave you a man's job, now.
Now
can you handle it? And you've got Joan, who's kind of trapped.
I like Joan.
In the old stereotype. Sunday's episode was fascinating for Joan, because she is basically the office manager, but she doesn't have the title per se, and she doesn't have the respect from a lot of the, you know, the young guys that she's kind of overseeing. So they, they use her office as a shortcut to get through places, and they make fun of her. They make fun of her, and the cartoon. one of the ad guys who's working, who's a temp or a part-timer working for Peggy, but basically he draws a lewd cartoon of Lane and Joan, and Peggy says, don't do that, that's wrong, and he blows her off, and he posts it up into Joan's office, and so Joan sees it and is really upset, and then Peggy takes it down and complains to Don, and Don says, well, why are you telling me this? Take care of it, you know. What do you mean take care of it? Well, dress him down, fire him, I don't care. And so she fires the guy, and he, of course, doesn't take it well. And then she tells Joan later on, and then Joan says, you didn't do this for me, you did it for you.
Oh, because she was trying to show that she had position and respect.
Right, and it was a fact. I love how they explore the different relationships. And Joan basically said, you know, if you let me handle it, this is what I would have done, with the same result. But you had to show that you were...
Well, regardless of either way, he should have been fired. I don't care. Yeah. Especially if your boss tells you ahead of time not to do something.
By today's standards, yes, but you got to remember this is the 60s where, you know, it's a different world.
It's a guy's world, and I get that, yeah.
By the way, TV Guide did a hilarious review of 1965 new shows through the eyes of Sally Draper, Don's daughter. Did you hear about what happened several episodes ago?
No.
Sally's watching The Manford Munkle with David McCallum as Ilya Kuryakin.
Right.
And starts masturbating. And she's at a friend's house, and the friend's mom walks in. She's just touching herself inappropriately. The other little girl doesn't even notice, but the friend's mom sends her home, you know, drags her home, tells Betty. Betty punishes her. And then Betty calls Don. She's like 10, 11.
Oh.
It's the right age. But it was just really interesting. So Entertainment Weekly did this whole review of 1965 through the eyes of Sally Draper. Very funny stuff. But I just really enjoy what they're doing to explore this time period realistically and showing how the world is changing, and Don's realizing the psychologist he's been flirting with finally, you know, now that we're midway through the season, agrees to go on a date with him. And he finally shows self-restraint because he's being Don, too cool for school, but he sends the cab to go to her house. And she's like, well, where do you live? Around the corner. It's like, well... And she's basically willing to consent to, you know, spending the night with him. And he shows restraint and says, not yet. And I'm like, go Don. It's just
learning to be a gentleman.
It's just fascinating to watch. I mean, if Jon Hamm doesn't get the, you know, and nothing against Bryan Cranston, who's brilliant.
I was about to say, Bryan Cranston knocks it out of the box.
Breaking Bad is not my cup of tea.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
But Bryan Cranston's an amazing actor who was long overdue. But Jon Hamm's pretty stinking good. And these last couple episodes, he's knocked it out of the park.
All right.
There's internet buzz that there are fans who want to draft him to be Superman in the next movie. I don't think it'll happen because he's too old. Although, Alcide, can't pronounce his last name, Manganiello, or...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Alcide from True Blood has been mentioned as a possibility.
Oh, he would be hot. Yes. I just pictured him in the...
Lydia stares at the wall,
dreaming. No, I just pictured him for a second in the Superman tights. Yes, that would work for me.
But yeah, I urge you, start with season 4 of True Blood.
No, you mean Mad Men, yes.
Of Mad Men. And Betty's still in it, but... It's also interesting to see her relationship with her new husband, because I know the actor who plays him, and I'm glad that he finally got this great big break. Chris Stanley is his name, but it's really interesting because he's wanting her to grow up and be mature instead of this pampered little princess.
Okay. All right. Moving on to The Closer, which apparently I'm the only one who saw, but I'll do this real quick. Do you guys watch The Closer at all?
Nope.
Not me, no.
Okay. Well, we talked about it last week, and so I feel like I have to talk about the finale a little bit, because we were talking about how the finale a couple seasons ago ended with somebody being shot, and we're like, okay, you can't do the same thing twice. So I am we were hopeful that this week's episode was not going to do that, and I'm very happy to say it didn't. It basically... concluded the whole storyline they had, like, who's going to be the new chief. because Brenda was on the short list, and it looked like it was between her and this other guy, who's a pretty good actor. I like him. I've seen him in a bunch of other things. And they had them working a case together, and Brenda actually had to be sort of political because she was either going to be this guy's boss or he was going to end up being her boss. So she couldn't really tick him off, which is showing a lot of restraint on Brenda's part. But the whole premise of the case was that these EMTs were shot by this guy, and they had to figure out who had jurisdiction over the case because it was linked to an FBI case, blah, 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 blah. But the main thing was this guy was crazy. He got denied being a firefighter like 4 or 5 times because he failed a psych eval. He had one of those narcissistic personalities where he thought that he needed to save the world, or he had delusions of grandeur. And when they talked to psychiatrists about, you know, his exams, the psychiatrist's like, what do you want to know? Because this dude will totally kill somebody. So that was an interesting conversation. But the main premise was he kills the firefighters so that they'll have a funeral. And so he can maximize the amount of people, the amount of firefighters he can kill at the funeral. So he just basically killed those two guys to cause a funeral so he can get hundreds of firefighters to show up at one spot. And at first they think he's going to use a bomb because his first time he tried to kill firefighters, he used a bomb that didn't go off. And this time he makes sarin gas. So his intention is to let the gas out and kill like thousands of people. What was the interesting part is you get to the moment of decision where Brenda, basically, she suspects that this guy is at the funeral, but they can't find him. She thinks he has a bomb, but she can't prove it. So the question is, do you cancel the funeral with no evidence? Because if she cancels the funeral and they can't find the guy, then she looks like an idiot and she probably won't become chief. Or do you stand on the side of caution and cancel the funeral? Because if you don't and a bunch of people get killed, then that's your fault. You know what I mean? So, you know, she does the... And I like the fact that Pope tried to protect her from that decision. So he cancels the funeral, so it's not on her. So that doesn't reflect... So, like, because he knows he's not in the running anyway. So he figures, I'll do it. And if it doesn't pan out, then it'll be fine. And she the thing that's a trip is it goes through the whole thing. They corner this guy. He takes a hostage. Brenda ends up taking the shot and kills this because he's got a dead man switch on the bomb. And she ends up shooting him in the head at very close range. It was very messy. But everybody was like, why'd you do that? Because now you've screwed your chance for chief. And I was like, she just saved the day. What are you talking about? But apparently, if the politicos don't like a chief of police who shoots people. So they did the whole psych out where you think that she got it, but then she didn't. And whatever. But I mean, I never really thought that she was going to get chief of police because if she did, then the show would be over.
Yep.
Because she would be in charge and not on the street. I actually would have been more surprised if she had been police chief. But the cliffhanger that they left us with was the guy who took over is talking about all these new changes he's going to make. And they're kind of insinuating that those changes might involve her department because she has a special department. But I don't know. I mean, that wasn't a super cliffhanger, but, you know, it's like, aren't you interested for next season? All right, Allison.
Yeah.
You're up for Warehouse 13.
How exciting. Yeah, they had the first part of a 2-part season finale this week. And, you know, it was typical Warehouse 13. They build you up, and when they finally pay it off, it's like, you know, it's just kind of like that, and I continue to not particularly care for either of the two leads, but fortunately they're giving more time and things to do to the supporting cast, which is a good thing, because they have a solid, very solid supporting cast.
I love
cast.
Claudia as a character and as an actor.
She's wonderful. She is terrific, and I love the fact that they're giving her more to do, and that they're giving Artie more to do, and, you know, I figure the more it shifts focus away from the two leads, the better off it is. But you know, they also managed to kill off one of the characters, the supporting characters, or actually not even really a supporting character, a recurrent character. One of the regents, played by Mark Sheppard, seems to have gone the way of all things, and they killed him off in a really stupid way. It's like completely nonsensical. You're watching him go out and thinking, why are you doing that? And you know, it's like I said, it's one of the flaws of the show that things happen just because they need to move the plot forward, not because it's the logical thing to do. And we're going to see the resolution of their little cliffhanger that they left. H.G. Wells is apparently really evil after all. Big surprise there. And she's going to do her thing next week. So we'll see that.
Okay, I'm confused. Isn't H.G. Wells an author of books?
Yes.
It's hard to explain.
But H.G. Wells in the Warehouse 13 verse is a woman who was the actual writer of the stories, and she used her brother as a cover for it. Like I said, logic does not play a big part in Warehouse 13. But they've got her running around doing whatever.
What were you gonna say?
See, I get really frustrated with the they're a bad guy, no, they're a good guy, no, they're really a bad guy thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go to that well too much. Or Wells in this case.
Oh, that was bad.
But I was actually kind of hoping that they might integrate her into the primary cast and like dump somebody else.
Yeah, wouldn't that have been nice? Really?
I don't know why. I don't like the... I mean, the leads are...
They're boring.
They're attractive.
They're boring. They're
physically attractive, but I think the characters are dull.
Not just the characters, the actors are dull.
Yeah, they're boring. And when it comes to actually him, he's actually actively annoying. You know, he's constantly doing all these little cutesy things and stuff to remind you what a geek he is, which totally does not play at all. It's like, I don't believe that he has seen any of this stuff. It's strictly the writer.
I think it's really a function of writers think something is cute.
Yes.
And give it to the actor, and it doesn't play as cute when it's filmed.
Well, it's not, but if that was true, then you wouldn't like any of the characters on the show, and that's not true. They're the actors who are actually good shine in that show, and the actors who suck do not. And I'm not going to say it's the writers, because the writers are consistent, and those actors are consistently just irritating. I've talked to a couple people on the podcast who do like them. If you go back and listen to a couple of the old ones, there are some people who do like them. I am not one of them, and they are the reason why I no longer watch the show. Like, I can't watch... Oh, those
and I can understand that, because they're really kind of intolerable to sit through. And, you know, I do feel sorry for them in one respect. The dialogue is absolutely obscenely horrible. I mean, I would hate to have to voice what they are regularly asked to do on a weekly basis. But even so, as you pointed out, the better actors somehow manage to take this really crappy dialogue and weave it into gold.
Right.
And that just does not happen with the two leads. The dialogue is just as bad as it looks on the printed page.
If one of them was good, I could watch the show. If either one of them was a good actor and the other one sucked, I'd be all right.
What do you think, Allison? What do you think of the episode where they switched bodies?
Oh God.
I guess that's
only, first of all, it's such an old cliche. It's like, my God, are you like legally obligated to do a show like that?
Any science fiction show that's around for three seasons has to. I mean, Star Trek did it.
Yeah, every show
it's in the contract, I guess. But the thing is, it only works if you've got actors who actually are really talented and character actors and can play each other. And that just didn't happen here. They would like get an occasional mannerism, and that was about it. The rest of it was just really painful to watch.
One of the things that kind of frustrates me is, what's the larger arc story?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to really have one.
It's just
we got a bunch of artifacts. You know, season one, they kind of had this thing with Roger Reese's, I forget the character's name, as the bad guy. And of course, he turned out to be not completely bad. It's like, come on, let some people be bad. Just like when Heroes did that misguided arc where Siler is good for a while, then turns bad.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That actually made me stop watching the show. That was the reason why I stopped watching. I mean, there was other reasons, because Heroes kind of sucked, but the whole Siler going good, it took me, I was like, all right, well, maybe Siler's, okay, I'll buy it. You can do that once. Will you take a character?
Once and only once.
Will you take a character who's been evil for several seasons and you make them good? All right.
Yeah, but you also have to lead up to it properly. You can't just say, well, they're good all of a sudden.
I thought they did an okay job with that. Like, I was willing to suspend my disbelief to buy that Siler was good. I was like, sure, okay. But then 5 seconds later, he kills his girlfriend and he's evil again. I was like, okay, I'm done. Like, that was literally the scene where he cuts her brain open on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I've ever seen Heroes. That was it.
But I don't know. It just seems for me right now, the thing that interests me kind of the most is Claudia's progression as an agent in training.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I wish they would. I don't know. I don't know if you refocus the show, or I wonder if they do focus groups for the show and just realize, you know, they're attractive, but they're terrible. The leads.
Yeah. I mean, well, my thing is, you should have figured that out in the pilot.
Seriously.
You know, that's something, that's why you do pilots, to see how the chemistry works, to see if these people are working out, and if they're not, then you recast. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they totally missed the opportunity to recast that, because the idea is not a bad idea for Warehouse 13, and
they went through a lot of undulations, the fact how many people work, you know. Jane Espenson has a co-created credit on the show, and I don't think she's ever written an episode besides the pilot.
No.
Yeah. I think the show just went like this.
It's one of their highest rated shows, though.
That's fine. I just don't need to watch it.
Well, that's because it doesn't take a whole lot of effort to watch it. It's deliberately episodic for that reason. I mean, you know, for those of us who really like and kind of need an arc to tune in, we have to have an overall reason why this show exists. This is definitely a negative, but for other people who just want to watch something to distract themselves for an hour, and there's a surprising number of people who are like that, who don't want to think about what they're watching, that's really what the show is geared to. Because you can come in at any point and it's no different, and you just watch it. And you don't have to worry that you're going to come in on something, you're going to miss something that happened last week or is integral to understanding what's happening this week. You know, that's not going to be a problem. For that matter, you can come in halfway through an episode and not have any trouble catching up.
All right.
Know, that's the kind of show it is. And that appeals to a lot of people.
All right, let's... I don't like to bash a show for longer than 5 minutes, so let's call it quits on the Warehouse 13. So the finale, this part one of the finale just happened, so part two will be next week, and maybe we'll talk about it, but I doubt it, actually, because there's going to be so much new television. So, all right, that wraps up our Warehouse 13 arc, and the next show up is Nikita. This was the second episode of Nikita. And I have to say, I think it was actually better than the pilot. Did you agree?
I watched the pilot. I didn't watch episode two.
Episode two, I thought, was better. It was just because you didn't have the explaining who everybody was. It was basically, let's jump in. You know Nikita's trying to stop Division. Is it Division? Section.
Mm-hmm.
I get confused.
Division.
So we know Nikita's trying to stop Division. And you know who all the players are now, so you actually have a full episode. So,
Section, Division, SD6, whatever.
I know. Well, on the TV show, it was Section that worked for Division. But now, on this show, they're Division. And so I get confused a little bit. But it was just straight up, they showed that Division were basically nothing but a mercenary group, because they take this guy who obviously was a murderer who got off on a technicality, and they're basically hired as his security, so that there are a bunch of people that want him dead because of all the people that he's killed. He's a war criminal. And so Division works to put him in a safe house. They give him bodyguards, And they mainly do that because he knows the location of some uranium that he's got hidden and buried somewhere. And they're like, we want the uranium. We'll give you protection and change your name and hide you, blah, blah, blah. But what the good thing actually about the episode is a flashback, too, in that we learned how Alex came to work for Nikita. And we got to see the flashback and their relationship, and that was kind of interesting. It wasn't some of the best stellar acting I've ever seen in my life, but it was enough for me to be like, okay, this is why they work together, this is why they're friends, this is how she got her training and all that other stuff. So that was pretty cool. But they also, the cliffhanger, of course, of the episode is that because she was supposed to, Alex, they wanted her to sleep with the guy. The war hero, because he just got out of prison. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I want a girl. But they were like, you know, we can't trust a call service because it's top secret, so get one of the new girls. So they were like, oh, Alex will sleep with him, which didn't work out very well because she refused. And then she got into a fight with the black girl, who I actually don't understand her point in the show. She's the most useless one-dimensional character ever. I was like, why does she not like Alex? It makes no sense. I was
she's
like,
a plot device. She's not a character.
Exactly.
And the script said so.
And it's like, is it because she likes the guy? And I was like, what are we, in high school? You guys are freaking training to be assassins. What are you doing? You know, and so they literally get into a fist fight because that girl thinks that Alex is trying to steal her boyfriend. And obviously Alex is not even paying attention to her boyfriend at all. It's the boyfriend that's paying attention to Alex. So she gets into a fight with Alex, and I'm like, oh my god, why am I watching a teen drama?
It is the CW.
I know, but yes. Seriously, you're assassins, okay?
I'm the CW.
But what's a trip is, because they got into the fight, Division's like, you guys have 2 weeks to show improvement or you'll basically be executed. So because they got into that stupid schoolyard fight, they have 2 weeks to show that they have improved. But hey, I hope the black chick gets executed totally, like, because she's annoying. She is really annoying, and she serves no purpose, and that actress isn't that good. She's pretty, but that's all she's got going for her.
See, for me, the one that irritates me most is, unfortunately, the lead. I just think she's incredibly boring.
Maggie
she too. Has no personality. She's like a block of wood. And also, my God, the woman is so skinny. I just want to feed her a sandwich through the TV. It's terrifying how skinny this woman is. She makes Callista Flockhart look obese by comparison.
Wow.
I mean, seriously, they in the very first episode, in the pilot.
When they showed her in a bikini?
They showed her in a bikini, and I'm thinking, oh, God, cover her, please. That's scary.
I think Maggie Q is okay. She doesn't bother me. She's not stellar. I'm like, I'm not going, oh my gosh, she's the best actress, but she doesn't irritate me. Like, the guy playing Michael irritates me.
Shane West.
He is awful. We're talking about a recast. You know, can we recast him, please?
You know, I've seen him in stuff that he wasn't bad at. He was in ER for several seasons, and he was the son on Once and Again. But yeah, I don't like him in this. He's boring.
Yeah, he is absolutely awful.
And that's the trouble. You know, you were talking about Warehouse 13, not watching it because you can't stand the leads. And I'm in the same place with this show because they are so boring and I don't care about them. If Nikita were to get killed in the next episode, I wouldn't care. Or if he were to get killed, I wouldn't care.
I wouldn't care if Michael got killed. But I have to say, I like Nikita and I like Alex. I do like them.
I just can't form an attachment to either of them. I they bore me a lot, and the stuff that they bring up about their characters seems like a list of cliches rather than actual character traits.
I will give you the cliches for this week's, because it was the whole, you know, detox, getting off drugs thing. I was like, oh, all right.
Oh, is that Alex's background?
Yeah. So that was a little cliche, but I have to say I like seeing how they first met. And all that. I like that.
And also having somebody detox in a sauna.
I don't understand what that was about.
It's like, you know, that's a great way if you want to kill somebody.
Because they're already going to be dehydrated and they need water. So let's sweat them out.
The water they've got.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting thing. But yeah, I didn't mind that as much. Michael is just shoot him already. But I set up my TiVo for all my new and returning shows, and Nikita has not been booted. So I guess I'm going to keep...
That's because Fringe...
No, Fringe is back. Fringe is back. I get two... I can record two things. So if it's a third thing that comes...
Wait till 30 Rock moves to its real time slot, though.
Oh, yeah. It'll get booted. If...
Bye, Nikita.
I basically order my list of... If that's the order in which I like shows and what I think are important, I put them at the top of my list on my TiVo, and the things that I think are okay, I put them at the bottom. And basically, based on that, TiVo decides, like, if I have two...
It goes by your priorities.
It goes by my priorities, and so Nikita's at the bottom of my priority list, and so if something comes along, it gets booted. But until then, I'll keep watching. I don't mind it. I mean, I like talking about it. It's okay. It hasn't gotten to the point where I can't stand it. All right, the last show, we're going to move on, since, like I said, I don't want to talk about stuff too negative for too long. The last show we're going to talk about is premiere of a show called Outlaw that came on NBC. I talked about it in the last podcast last week.
Yeah, that I have not seen that.
I was excited about it. It was mainly because of Jimmy Smits. I just came off of my whole West Wing craze and
your West Wing
bend, yeah. And so I was like, "Ooh, Jimmy Smits in a new show!" And on Bravo, they're showing the Outlaw premiere in between the West Wing, so they're like promoting it that way. And I was like, "Oh, that's pretty smart." And I saw on Facebook, some of the people were talking about they liked it, didn't like it, whatever. And so I was kind of like, "Oh, is it gonna suck?" And I watched it, and I liked it. I mean, Jimmy Smits has a whole lot of charm. Like, that man has more charm in his pinky than most people. And I do believe he's being a little... Because somebody's complaint was that he's being really self-righteous and preachy and stuff. And I get that, and it does have a little bit of that. But it had this moment that made me laugh out loud that I haven't done in a while. And it was basically... there was a scene where one of his lawyers, he has like assistants, lawyers, whatever, I don't know what they're called. They're not paralegal because they're lawyers.
Clerks?
But I guess they're clerking for him or whatever. Yeah, the lawyers that are clerking for him after he quits the Supreme Court and he's just working as a lawyer or whatever. One of his clerks overhears a conversation with this guy that he's calling the doc, and he tells him that he's just got 3 months. He's like, "Well, how long do I have?" He's like, 3 months. And so she thinks that he has 3 months left to live. So she's all freaked out about the information. And I was thinking, you know, if you find out your boss has 3 months to live, you just shut up and you don't say anything. You go about your business and you maybe help him out a little more, but that's it. The very next day, he's trying to do something with the case, and one of the clients is yelling at him. And she's like, "How dare you yell at him? He's only got 3 months to live, and he's helping you out with those 3 months." And everyone just shuts. It's like crickets. And he's just looking at her like, "What?" And he just looks totally stunned, and he sends the clients away, and he's like, "What are you talking about?" And she goes, "I overheard your conversation, and I'm just so sorry." He's like, no, you misunderstood. And she's like, "But I just have to tell you that I love you. I just really love you. And I never..." And she's like, gives us his confession. And his eyes get all big. And like, everybody that works with him are all standing around going, And she's like, "I've been in love with you for whatever long. And I just needed to tell you before it's too late." And he's like, "I think I need to talk to you over here." And I fell out loud. Like, that was the funny... I don't know. It's a blonde chick. I don't know who it is. But I laughed so hard. Because, of course, you know, he doesn't have 3 months to live. That's not the thing. And he's like, "Yeah, that was my bookie. His name is Doc. I got 3 months to pay off my debt." And she was like, "Oh, awkward." And he was like, "Yeah, so..." And she's like, "I'm going to assume it's not mutual." He's like, "Not really, no." You know, he's like, "I don't even remember the last three women I slept with." And then she just rattles the names off. And he just looks at her
"That is funny."
And he was like, "All right." He's like, "You're too good for me." It was just the most awkward and hilarious conversation ever. Like, that alone was enough for me to be like, yeah, I'm watching this next week.
Well, the premise is really far-fetched, but...
Well, that a Supreme Court justice would ever retire? Yeah. But they actually, they gave some information that makes you... Okay, one, the thing that was a little cheesy was the reason that he quits, part is twofold, is one, his father was like this super 60s civil rights activist, and he was always in different causes. And he is a super conservative, right-wing Supreme Court justice. And so his father always spoke out against him, but always said, I love my son, I just think he's wrong, right? And then his father gets killed. And so then he kind of feels like he needs to support his father's legacy, so he starts thinking about his decisions, and instead of being super right-wing, he starts to come a little more towards the left, right? So the senators who confirmed him and put him in his position are pretty much who have supported him and everything have said, you need to swing back to the right or we'll... Because he gets to this case and it looks like he's the guy that's going on death row that he ends up saving that dude's life. It's basically a Supreme Court ruling and he is starting to swing to saving that dude's life. And they're like, if you vote to save his life, we're going to make sure you're not on the court. And he's like, what are you talking about? And he says, you think you can't get kicked off the Supreme Court? We can impeach you based on behavior. It's like it's happened before. It can happen. And he's like, you think that... And they show very obviously he's got a serious gambling problem. And he owes like $250,000 to these bookies. And the rumor is $500,000 that he owes to these bookies and stuff. So... To have a Supreme Court justice that's in debt that heavily, mm-hmm. they're like, that's enough to impeach you. And they tell him that if he votes the other way, then they're going to impeach him. So basically, he does what he wants to do and saves the guy's life, but then resigns so that he doesn't get impeached. Gotcha. So it's not so much, it's not as improbable as they make it sound.
Yeah, the early ads and descriptions really made it seem like what alternate universe is this from?
Right, and yeah, they give you some background. They give him reasons, and they give him motivation. Though I think that the whole dying father motivation is a little cheesy. But I was actually a little worried. Like in the first 10 minutes, I was like, oh, I don't know about this. But once he got his team together and everybody started interacting, and he has a nice ensemble. Then I was like, okay. The only person I actually have a problem with in his ensemble is the young guy. He's actually from West Wing. He was Josh's assistant in season 5. Do you remember that guy? He was just really annoying. He was the son of a senator, and Josh couldn't fire him even though he was incompetent. He was goofy and incompetent, and Josh really hated the guy. But it's that guy is one of his clerks, and he's just as annoying on this show as he was on the West Wing. So I'd say you got one annoying character out of an ensemble of about 5. So I'm okay. I can deal with that.
So worth watching.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, you should give it a try. See if it fits in your taste. And if it does, great. If not, then, you know, no harm done. And I think it's repeating tonight. I think they said Saturday night repeat it or something. But if not, check it out online. I think it's worth your time. And if you don't like it, great, fine. If you do, fine. I like it. I'm going to be watching it. So that wraps up this podcast. We went a little long. And this is probably the last short one we're going to have. Because next week, I'm sure, is going to be insane. I'm going to have to
Next one will be 5 days long.
Yeah, I'm going to have to like put a timer on each episode or each show that we talk about. But as always, I wanted to remind you guys that we now have a Twitter feed. Follow us at TV Campfire. And we now have a Facebook page, also TV Campfire, but I think it's 2 words on Facebook. So look us up, check us out. If you have any feedback, you can give us feedback on Twitter. You can give us feedback on Facebook. And as always, you can send it at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Anybody got any last comments? Signing off.
Good viewing.
Yeah.
All right. So, talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.